All right, we'll start with
in progress.
Always the little messages. All right, we'll start with the introductions. Go ahead, Thomas.
Thomas Noble, the them pronouns, co-chair.
Paul.
Council member.
TJ.
Hi, TJ Lee Miyake, council member.
Na. Oh, go ahead.
Hi, Na Lee, she, her, council member.
Let's just go around the block. Maria.
Maria Lacayo, she, her, HIV Health Services.
Hi, Stephen.
Stephen Spano, he, him, or they, them pronouns, the HCAP staff attorney at the AIDS Legal Referral Panel.
Crown.
Hello, Crown, he, him, council staff.
And Kira.
Hi, everyone. Kira, she, her pronouns, and I am also council staff.
And I forgot to introduce myself. I'm Chuck Adams, one of the co-chairs for this committee. There we go. Let's review and approve the agenda. There we go. Anybody have any questions or additions or subtractions?
Nope.
All right, then we'll approve that by consensus, and then we'll move on to the draft minutes from the last meeting. Any corrections, additions? If not, we'll prove that by consensus. Are there any other announcements besides Mark? Oh, okay. There's no public here, basically. I guess, Stephen, then that means you're up. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. And thanks for having me today. So I look forward to this meeting. It's always helpful to get feedback, in anticipation of the full planning council meeting. I'm super excited about this year being my first time to do it in person. I will cross my fingers right now that remains true. I'll share my screen.
So do you want questions as we go along, or would you rather at the end?
I'm open to whatever. I'm happy to roll with how you all want to do things.
Okay.
What I will say is it's unclear to me. I know that for this meeting, it was dedicated, for, I think, 30 minutes. Sure. I can work with that and I can do that. I anticipate the full presentation to be a little bit longer than that. For purposes of this preview, I will skip kind of the beginning half, which is my usual an outreach presentation of HCAP, because I think everybody on this call is already familiar, but I can breeze through that for this meeting. So I'll just do a quick overview and then kind of move into the synopsis of my annual report. The full report I sent out to council staff earlier. I asked them to hold off on sending it out just in case I get feedback that requires me making any alterations to the final report. These slides are pretty much what I tend to work off of. And then I'll have, I think it's maybe a 15-page report that typically accompanies. Is everybody able to see my screen?
Yes.
All right, cool. So the goals for the presentation will to be increased in understanding of the HCAP services. I think a lot of people are familiar with it. As I said, I'll kind of skip through that very quickly today. I will summarize the annual data for my 22-23 contract year. There's already one edit. And then I will hopefully discuss some of the successes and challenges that our consumers face based on my experience with the program this past year. So folks, I think, are familiar with this. I specialize in alternative dispute resolution. It is common to see folks in any level of conflict, for be it from the contract stage all the way through litigation, especially in the housing realm, to experience correlating stress levels. We know that for people living with HIV, there's an additional factor that is the T cell count. And I've seen that in my own body with my lived experience. I've also seen it, and I think we've all seen it with our clients as they exhibit kind of some of their more acute behavioral concerns around, you know, housing insecurity and other legal matters. So the goal for my program is to kind of support in an alternative way to resolve the disputes using the least adversarial methods of resolution. This is what I stand for, right? It's the HIV Consumer Advocacy Project. I provide services to consumers, or I prefer the word recipients these days, of Ryan White funded programs located in the San Francisco EMA, as well as the service providers that provide those services, which are funded through the San Francisco Department of Public Health, HIV Health Services Department. It is a relatively unique program. These are kind of the definitions of what a consumer and service provider are, which I can go into more detail on at the end of the month. The service categories that are managed by the Ryan White Care are the primary, the services that we're talking about. And these are kind of an overview of the services that I provide in the broadest categories. And a lot of it really revolves around advocacy, mediation, grievance process support, and referrals. I will talk a little bit later in the month about how, what my process is and how I work with clients on an individual issue, noting that most consumers do show up with far more than one issue. And oftentimes it requires a longer term relationship with a client in order to kind of get them to where they're trying to go. Are there any questions so far?
No.
So I'll move on then to just an overview of what our clients were. This year, there were 97 unduplicated clients with a total of 129 HCAP matters. This is one version older. I know that I made a lot of these edits, and I apologize for that. So there is a decrease in services this year in unduplicated clients, only by, six clients. There's only one less HCAP matter. So although I saw less clients, the number of matters that I saw did not really change in any kind of meaningful way. And that's true for a lot of my clients because they come, as I said, with multiple matters. I had this year, it was three clients in Marin, one client in San Mateo, and 93 clients in the San Francisco EMA. With regard to consumer data, with the demographics of the clients that we are seeing, 72 of the clients are over 50. In previous years, we kind of called the line at age 50. But I know working with a lot of the clients that they see of varying legal issues depending on where they sit in that age realm. Eligibility for Medicare, Social Security benefits, and retirement benefits do tend to affect how a client lives and what they're qualified for as far as in-home supportive services, depending on their age. And so I thought it was helpful to begin breaking down, as of last year, a little bit more granularly. So 35 of those clients are between 51 and 60. 9 of them are between 61 and 63. 14 of them are between 63 and 66, and four of them between 67 and 69, and 10 are over 70. There's not a lot of change, I can say, although it was pretty evident. I had a number of clients that aged out of the 60 year old category and into that 61, 63. Which brings some people, depending on when they actually were born, into retirement age for SSR. Not a whole lot of change to the other demographics. There were 81 identified as male, 7 identified as female, 5 identified as transgender, and others were unknown. The race ethnicity, 60 of my unduplicated clients were white, 8 identified as Black African American, 22 identified as Latinx. The others are unknown. I do want to note that actually, and this is a good point to do it because this is some data that changed. AORP, this is a transitional year for AORP. We switched our database system over to an online cloud-based platform. No data has been lost. However, our ability to run reports now has been shifted pretty drastically. There's going to be some pretty significant changes in, you'll know, and I've kind of done it a little bit, I've explained it more in more detail in the full report, but we're no longer able to do matrices. So whereas in previous years, I've been able to break down, individual issues, miscommunication, right? Whether that was dealt with a grievance or whether that dealt with, in these kind of cross-referencing data, that is no longer possible. We knew in the transition to this cloud-based platform that we would gain some functionality. The main goals were to protect the integrity of the system and security of the system, as well as increase the staff's ability to work remotely, which is has become more a way of life for some of our folks. We also knew that we'd lose some functionality. And unfortunately, there's not an unlimited budget to kind of dip into some of the more advanced features within the system. So no data was lost in this, although in the transfer process, fields moved to different fields, and to go into each individual record and change them became very, very cumbersome. We weren't able to, sometimes they moved to a particular case and sometimes they moved to a particular client record. And so although no data was lost, the ability to run a report and capture all of the data in an accurate way this particular year was challenged. I don't foresee the same issues moving forward because we'll be starting fresh for the 23-24 contract year. So sexual orientation, again, not a whole lot of changes. 63 folks identified as gay or lesbian, 12 identified as heterosexual, 11 identified as bisexual, and the remainder is unknown. Income, our clients continue to be very low income. A large majority receiving less than $15,000 per year, 12 receiving between $15,000 and $26,000, 15 between $26,000 and $50,000, and 0 of my clients this year had more than $50,000 of annual income. The top service categories did not change a whole lot. Housing services remained at the top. There was an increase in those issues that I saw to 31. There were 19 primary care issues and 17 dental services issues in those categories. The top issues that I saw revolved around information and referrals. I should note that oftentimes, as I said, clients come with multiple issues. So they may come to me needing a mediation or ask for support in filing a grievance or ask for my advocacy support in a particular instance. And that might, from my work with that client, that might generate 2 or 3 different referrals to different agencies, each counted as separate issues. 13 of the cases that I saw dealt with quality of care issues, and 10 of the issues that I saw dealt with problematic policies or procedures. This is one of those categories that I really do have to think about for next year. When I'm kind of talking about the individual issues, it makes sense to kind of lump these into bigger categories for 2 reasons. 1, for the purpose of capturing that data and accurately reporting it. And 2, because it seems like the issues that I'm seeing are repetitive to a certain extent, And I feel like it's most important to understand the types of the issues that I'm seeing. You know, a problematic policy or procedure could be perceived by a client as a quality of care issue. It doesn't necessarily accurately give a full picture of any particular case. So I really do need to think about these categories. I'm open to feedback around that once folks see the final report, but I'll talk more about that. Again, top number of services rendered were referrals. A lot of stuff revolved around care coordination. And oftentimes I should note that care coordination it coincides with advocacy in a big way. And so I'm still trying to wrap my head around the easiest way to kind of let folks know what it is that I'm doing for a client in a particular case that is different than what a case manager might do, but also kind of gives an accurate understanding of, you know, why the client reached out to me. There were 13 grievances filed, which is more in line with, I think, the terminology that folks are used to. All services rendered in every instance, although there are 12 cases pending from the end of the contract year. And I did file all the grievances that I was requested to file. So I will try to kind of synthesize this a little bit based on the HCAP services, the HCAP cases that I saw this year. The housing services and supportive housing environments, as well as adequate subsidization of people living with HIV/AIDS, is critical. Later in the report, I will talk about at least one success and some of the challenges that I have seen that kind of result from these types of housing issues and the housing subsidy issues. I should note that, you know, a housing subsidy provider for HCAP purposes is considered a housing services, and that's how I've been reporting them. The majority of the consumers that I see continue to face unique issues that are related to their aging. As I said, I think breaking it down more granularly for, you know, for our own analysis within the planning council is helpful, because I think we're going to see an increasing need in certain services. It's not necessarily a linear thing, but all of these issues do relate with aging, including, you know, the need for additional primary care services, in-home support, intensive case management services, care navigation, et cetera. There was a shift in service categories from the previous year, particularly in emergency services. There was a very steep decline in the number of emergency financial services that HCAP saw. I would caution folks to view that or read that as a decrease in need for the services, because that is absolutely not true. I know from working with the clients in the housing department here, that there is a continuing need for emergency financial assistance to support folks with back rent and eviction prevention. What this means in this report is that the HIV service providers that received the emergency financial assistance funding were unable to provide that support in this contract year in the same ways that they have previously. And so we were turning to outside organizations in the community and third-party support systems to try and get those needs met. So I want to caution folks, this is, again, one of the ways that the data that I have for my very small program could be misleading to folks if they try to glean too much from it or read too much into it, because it doesn't give a full picture of what's going on. It's a very specific data set that is folks that are reaching out or trying to access services from the Ryan White Care service categories. There was a shift toward using my services in advocacy efforts to improve the quality of care in various service categories. So oftentimes I was working with a client, who had a particular issue with one service provider, but by looping in additional service providers and looping in, you know, other clinical supports, you know, we were able to kind of work with clients to get, to achieve positive results. Obviously consumers continue to require referrals to services, the major part of what I do to try and get people connected to the network of care in a more robust way. So I'll talk a little bit about the successes and challenges that our clients are facing. This is one success that I had, and I do think it's important. I think folks have heard me say this before. I think it is important to highlight, especially when we have a great model for something that worked, because it gives us a North Star of, so to speak, of what we know works for a client. This was a situation where a client was relocated as a result of the RCFCI changes last year. They were relocated to an RCFCI from a facility that was delicensed as an RCFCI. And as I predicted in my previous report, these RCFCIs do typically have a one-year residency policy or limitation. This is an instance where a client did have a mobility issue that required him moving into an ADA accessible unit. Unfortunately, I know from not only dealing in HIV services, but also in other, aspects of in public comment and going to other community meetings, that there is a real need for ADA accessibility, within the older population in particular. And so it was a real trek to try and get a subsidized unit available for a client that was also ADA accessible. And so with this kind of timeline, sitting on the client's shoulders, it did result in some level of, what they perceived to be housing instability, which can add to stress and really have a deleterious overall effect on a client's health. So what we did first was we advocated for an extension to that program for as long, until a suitable, alternative permanent placement was available. We advocated for clinical team meetings where I could support the client, right? We did that first weekly. And then once we kind of all got on the same page, we were able to kind of, make that, less frequent. It also provided a space for the client to kind of consistently talk about their needs, reiterate what it was that they needed, talk about what their fears were, and provided a safe space for them to be heard. I think in a big way, those meetings helped recenter the client's voice as to what they need, and allowed us all to kind of work on behalf of the client rather than try to fit a square peg into a round hole in some instances. So recently the client did move to an ADA accessible unit. They obtained a deep long-term subsidy at 30% of their income, and they were able to get appropriate supportive services, including food, transportation, care navigation support, mental health support that is, being continued by the RCFCI. And they were given an opportunity to talk about exact modifications. Did they need grab bars? Did they need accessories to be able to safely maneuver in the bathroom, which was maybe a little bit smaller than the client would have hoped? And then the care team was able to, effectively go and get those things. I was also able to refer the client immediately to legal services. This is a client who had not signed a lease in years. They'd been in supportive services for a very, very long time and had never really had to sign a lease. It only been kind of moved around without needing to do that. And so that was a scary thing for them to do. So we were able to get them immediate support to kind of advise them on the best way to do that, the best timing to request reasonable accommodations and reasonable modifications, and work with the client through that. So they're still being supported. But this is a success that I think is really important because it indicates what we need. We need to have clients with permanent housing, with an adequate subsidy, and appropriate supports for what their level is, right? This is a client that's capable of taking their own medication, which might disqualify them from an RCFCI level of care. But that doesn't mean that they can do everything for themselves. And they do certainly do need some support. So I'm giving them a space to identify exactly what it is that they need, and then locate and connect the client to the appropriate service providers that can do that, was a huge part of the process. And it was unfortunately sometimes a very lengthy one. But in this instance, it was an amazing cooperation amongst the team. You know, the team, once we all got on the same page, the client felt heard and felt supported. Did they get the apartment of their dreams? They got close to it, right? But who doesn't get, you know, only close to that? And so I think this is a success worth highlighting. There do continue to be some challenges with the RCFCI system of care. I thought it was important to voice, you know, kind of the two main concerns that I have been hearing. The first is that one-year residency policy that folks, that the RCFCIs talk about, does result in some level of housing insecurity for the clients, whether it's a legitimate housing insecurity, like they're actually going to be evicted in 1 year, is irrelevant. The fact that clients feel like they might be and don't have anything to look forward to is what causes that level of stress. And we are likely to see their behaviors get worse and worse, and worse overall health outcomes as a result. So it's really important to kind of, I think, handle that delicately. The other thing is that there were a lot of clients that continued to be a little surprised by the cost of living in an RCFCI. I think a lot of folks were on, a 30% subsidy at times, and then in this shift, it changed to being a two-thirds of their income or 60% of their income. I understand the reasons for that because they are medically licensed facilities. But there was something in the communication about it that didn't land necessarily with clients, and that continued to be a stress where people were like, well, now they're taking two-thirds of my income. And, you know, I will say the flip side of that is it does incentivize those clients who are capable of living independently to kind of move out quicker and make those beds available for somebody who does need, you know, a medically licensed bed. At the same time, it also incentivizes people who are not necessarily ready to leave or able to leave safely to leave the beds because they'd rather have the extra third of their income. And so there is a sticking point there, and I'm not entirely sure how to say it. All I can do is voice what I'm hearing from the clients and what I'm seeing. There's always going to be the question of where to relocate residents and how to pay for it. And that process seems to fall very unfortunately on, you know, the case managers at these facilities. I'm not entirely sure. I have yet to see a case where a client is moving from a transitional care facility to independent living. That may be because it's working. It may be because it hasn't happened yet. I'm not entirely sure. But either way, I can't really report on how that part of the ladder is working. But I've also yet to see a person move from an RCFCI into a TRCF. So I don't know quite what to expect. I don't know whether we had some growing pains and they have been resolved. But at least in the context of my program, I have less to report on that. The one thing I will say is that, you know, there are folks that do need a significant level of in-home support. In the instance that I talked about as far as the success that we shared, the client was linked up with IHSS, which stands for In-Home Supportive Services. And there are assessments that need to be done. Some qualifications include, you know, a certain number of ADLs and the type of support. There are some challenges with that system that I will talk a little bit about. But the need for in-home support is evident for those people leaving an RCFCI. I will say it has also evidenced itself in other situations where clients simply age or become ill or, get an increase in the need for support in certain ADLs where their access to IHSS is very limited. So I'll talk a little bit more about that, but I am seeing an increasing need for in-home support services, and we do not currently have those services within the HIV services realm, at least not that I've been able to access. So I think if I were to summarize what some of the challenges are, there is a difference between housing and health. Without adequate support, and that can come in a lot of different ways for a lot of different people. People are on nonlinear paths to moving to independent housing or remaining in independent housing. And AORP does see repeat evictions for folks who don't have some level of support that that helps them continue to access services. We have seen it result in an increase or a return to emergency services. So one of the things that I can do is help to, informally resolve some issues with service providers to avoid litigation or avoid an eviction on somebody's record. But that's only when I'm dealing with an HIV service provider. When a client is living independently, my work really has to revolve around making referrals to services within the HIV system of care to get them some care navigation support, somebody that's going to meet the client where they are, develop a therapeutic relationship with them on a long-term basis, become familiar with their level of disability and their behaviors to help them appropriately access those services. Otherwise, I'm making referrals to folks who are unable to follow up on those referrals, regardless of how warmly that handoff happens. And as I said, I think it does lead to repeat evictions. I've seen folks booted off of, subsidies, not necessarily in the HIV world, but, folks booted off of subsidies because they're simply unable to, to follow up in the ways that they need to follow up in order to maintain both their housing and their subsidy. Some of it can be attributable to mental health and substance use disorders. I will also add that, there have been a number of cases in HCAP this year with regard to physical disabilities where clients are unable to actually leave their unit and they can't follow up appropriately. And there's nobody, backing them up to kind of help them in that way. So again, as folks continue to age and, see some of the effects of that aging, we're going to see an increase in need of this service. At least that's my prediction. But as always, a large number of the HCAP clients that I serve have coexisting mental health and/or substance use disorders along with HIV. Those behavioral issues can create barriers to the services. And although I want all providers to feel safe, and everybody has the right to feel safe when they're working. We have to understand that there is nowhere else to move these clients when they're terminated from critical care. They're either going to go to a psych emergency, they're going to go to jail, or they're going to leave the EMA, though I don't know where they would go to. So this is my plug for ICM services. This is one of the items that I think I've talked about a lot as far as, the missing need or the missing service in our HIV system of care. For several clients now, some of which are still open. And so I haven't done a complete report on them yet. There are unfortunately some folks whose acute behavioral issues don't allow them to appropriately access services. And as a result, they wind up kind of displaced out of a subsidy or out of a housing situation. What's important is that it's not necessarily indicated by the number of issues in my HCAP report, because these are issues that are not connected with a service that I know to exist. And so there's no way for me to report it other than to say this has been my professional experience. I also think it resonates with a lot of the providers that I work with on a regular basis, where you know, our most vulnerable community members, you know, need somebody that can meet them where they are. It may involve, you know, going there at, you know, at 10 a.m. and, you know, when your meeting is scheduled, and knocking on the door until 11 or noon and waiting for the client, and then calling them a couple of times and waiting for the client to get dressed. And by the time you meet with them, it's 1 o'clock, but you get that meeting done and the client is connected to an additional service, or they've signed the release that you need them to sign, or it's not a linear process. It's not an easy process. It is not an entry level position. It takes a lot of care and it takes a lot of patience, and to develop a relationship where somebody understands on that level a person's disabilities and behaviors and can educate the client on what the steps they need to take, right? And there's a difference between doing it for them and supporting them through the process. I understand that. But it does indicate a need for well-supported professionals, you know, who are trained in trauma-informed care and understand the network of care providers that we have, and can develop those therapeutic relationships on a long-term basis to help them continue to access services. And although it seems like an arduous process, it is far less expensive. It is far more empathetic than the client returning to emergency services and or going back to coordinated entry to start this process all over again. Aging with HIV. So as the population of people living with HIV continues to age, consumers face new challenges. There continue to be ongoing struggles with isolation. I saw a number of issues where clients really, even in their longtime support groups, did not feel comfortable that new people had engaged and the rules changed on them, or the facilitators changed from them. Folks have retired or moved positions. And so some of those therapeutic relationships are no longer there, and the client finds themselves without anywhere to go. And so that was a common report. I did not see a whole lot of issues regarding support animals, but I know AORP did. So I thought that it was important to note. Again, not because the fact that I didn't see any issues does not indicate that need is not there. This one service provider that I know does have support for service animals has about a 2-year wait list right now. So it's not that there's not a need for the services. It's just that I can't refer somebody to a service that I know, I won't refer a client to a service that I know is unable to support, because that would just be, you know, mean. There continues to be a disconnection from younger community members and service providers. These can be addressed through cultural sensitivity training on the part of providers and trauma-informed care on our part. Additional health issues, either related or unrelated to HIV/AIDS. These are things that have been reported by those long-term survivors that I'm in communication with. They talk about the need for services that maybe are less related to their HIV or AIDS status and more related to their, you know, geriatric care and general practitioner needs that are appearing. Mental health services, again, you will see a decrease in the services that I can report, not because there is a lack of need, but because the service providers that I know in the HIV system of care that receive funding for mental health services have very, very long wait lists and have limited capacity right now. And so I have been unable to effectively refer clients in a lot of instances to these providers. That being said, there is a lot of conversation around this in this year's budget ask. There's a number of advocacy networks that have been talking about this and the need for additional funding for mental health services, specifically for long-term survivors. So I think that will conclude. I will note again, this was my first draft, and I did have a second draft that I did not put up there. So I apologize for that, y'all. Some of the edits, especially with regard to the years, has been made, I promise you. But if there's any other comments, or if I can answer any questions or add anything, I am available to you all. And how did I do on time?
Perfect.
Cool.
It'll be just right for the full council. Are there any questions from anybody? Oh, go ahead, Thomas.
Yeah. Stephen, that was good. So I'm thinking it was too much, to tell you the truth. So I'm trying to think of like how to help with that. I think like literally whatever you said in the first third dropped off as you got to the last third for me. Like, so yeah. Did you have an agenda at the beginning?
Yeah, so at the very beginning, I talked about the goals for the conversation. The first was that I would increase the understanding of HCAP services. I would summarize the annual report, and then third, discuss some of the successes and challenges that the that it faced. I appreciate that feedback, and I think it's helpful. I am happy to edit it down. I think one question that I can ask to maybe help move in the right direction is, what did you find more interesting?
Totally. I'll let other members chime in before I continue. What did you, if we could do a quick round robin, what did you all find most interesting?
Manuel, why don't you go ahead and ask your question out loud?
It's just a comment. Thank you so much, Stephen, for this presentation. You know, I do appreciate hearing the challenges and the work ahead. You know, we've worked really closely, and I think the council is very aware because I've presented the RCFCI issues and how to work forward. And so I feel like I only heard negatives or like challenges in the work ahead. And that may be just one slide just dedicated to what's working. I think our relationship, ALRP and OCD, has improved. I feel like the city has improved in its relationship in serving clients. So, you know, I really welcome, you know me, I'm always working hard to improve everything, but I think also highlighting the positives, because I think sometimes, especially if people are not fully aware of the system or the changes that are happening, it can increase their anxiety, increase their frustration, increase the difficulty in partnering. And also to that point, I also wanted to mention, because you're mentioning, well, I don't refer to places where I'm not fully sure they're going to get served well. I would like to hear how that relationship is being built, you know, like what is being done to improve that relationship on both parties. So those are just my suggestions.
Thank you. So Manuel, I agree with you. We have an amazing relationship. We're very grateful to have you as a champion in the mayor's office. And, you know, honestly, the programs that you've worked on have really supported our clients in a major way. That success story that I highlighted is one of the RCFCIs. I will make sure to highlight the fact that that's what it is. And it is a stellar example of what, you know, what our cooperation has contribute to a success, you know? In my full report, I think I more accurately kind of give credit to the various service providers that we work with. I didn't go out and get the client a toilet seat. I didn't, you know, it's like, these are not things that I did, right? These are things that are amazing, like care navigators and clinical case managers. You know, these are things that all of those folks did, you know, given the client-centered approach that we're now using. And so that is an example of it. And I apologize if that wasn't really clear, but everybody here should know that was an RCFCI exit, and it was a messy start that we really, you know, pulled together very quickly on, and that client felt very supported by the end. So that is one success. I will make sure to highlight it, and I can certainly clean up those slides so that it doesn't feel like a gauntlet of negativity. I kind of noticed that as I was going through as well.
Did you have another comment, Manuel? Okay. Any other suggestions?
I think Chuck, so Stefan's question was basically like, what did folks find most, like, seriously, what do you remember right now of what was presented would probably be a good indicator of what was most interesting to you.
I can go. I think you did lose me near the end, but I think it's also because I'm from Marin County. So then like, I like tuned out a little bit because, you know, you're talking about like some of the different changes that are happening with like the RCFs in San Francisco. So I think that's where I kind of stopped paying attention a little bit, but that may be because it wasn't as relevant for me. But, you know, definitely, yeah, I think I would agree with Thomas. Like the beginning, I was like paying attention, seeing, you know, the changes. I think something I'm always looking for is kind of like when you describe the different things that you support the clients with, just because I'm trying to see when I can, you know, recommend your services to the clients and the service providers too. I think we forget that the service providers can reach out if they need support. So I think that's what I'm always like trying to hear, like kind of examples of, so I can kind of send referrals your way. Cause I think the work that you do is really, really supportive and helpful. And I'm trying to connect, you know, Marin County back into these services that we have access to.
Excellent. Yeah. So I think some of that is done in the very beginning of the presentation when I kind of give, you know, an overview of the program. I did race through it today and I apologize. I did it for the sake of the kind of the committee meeting versus the full planning council meeting. But I will make sure to make that a point so that the service providers who are not familiar with the program and the consumers that are not, you know, familiar with my program, fully understand it. And I'm hearing a theme here. I can, you know, I'm totally comfortable pulling a lot of the stuff about the RCFCIs out, to be honest with you. It's a little bit old news. I'd rather focus on the successes that we have seen because there have been some of them. That doesn't mean that there have been no challenges. And I think I can adequately, you know, garden that to make it better. I will do that.
Okay, great. Any more suggestions?
So I think the piece about like why the data couldn't be collected differently and all of that seemed a little too nuanced. I was just like, okay, I really do want to get to the stories. That's more my thing. So those three buckets that you wanted to kind of, I'd recommend like coming back to that when you switch to the next bucket of the objectives, putting up a slide like, now this is what I'm talking about. So at least it breaks it into three different sections for me. So I can, it felt like it just kind of ran all the way through. So if that helps at all.
So I can make sure I understand what you're saying, the bits about the kind of the top three of every category, or are you talking about the demographic part of it?
Your objectives. So you basically had three objectives, right?
Yes.
Your agenda. So each time you kind of move into a different part of the agenda, just kind of like saying, okay, now I'm gonna,
this is where I'm going.
Yeah. Cause that's where I didn't notice those shifts happening. Maybe I wasn't, it's just me, but I was just like, okay, there's just a lot of information there. And at some point it's just too much for me. Yeah. And the other piece that I really think is, I think it kind of goes into what Na was saying is for, imagine a council member that doesn't ever know what you've done. Do you know what I mean? So this is there are folks where it's an introduction, even community members of like, this is what we do. And I don't know if a community member can actually say, I always feel like what's kind of missed with the value of what you all bring is you kind of address the problems before they become significant problems. And so there's a very clear prevention kind of thing to something that blows up and ends up in the papers, or, you know, that's the part that I think I would personally like to make sure that people understand that you're kind of doing that behind the scenes. What's the word I want, y'all?
Proactively?
Yes. There you go. Thanks, TJ. So kind of a proactive problem solving with cases that could become elevated relatively quickly. So you're taking a lot of pressure off the system, and people are, you're doing it so skillfully, I don't think people are aware that that's happening. So it seems a little bit odd for you to kind of promote how well you're doing. So I'm not wondering if maybe us as members, when there's Q&A at the end, we could, somebody could, we could kind of chime in as a group to kind of highlight that during the discussion. How does
really
that sound?
Really quickly, so please. Sorry. So sorry to interrupt, but really quickly, we're nearing the end of our time and I don't want to miss sharing our beautiful needs assessment presentation really quickly.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, thanks.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay, let's move into that really quick. Thank you though, Stephen. It was excellent.
Yeah, thank you for your feedback. I will take all of those comments into account, and you can expect a different presentation. Look forward to it.
All right. All right, Kira, go ahead. Sorry about that.
All right, and I'll just quickly outline this. So this is just our report back, so the needs assessment presentation. And just as a quick reminder, the focus for 2022 was the trans community. So this is just giving a little bit of background as to who or how many participants were surveyed, the outreach efforts, as well as when exactly the surveys took place, because this effort did begin in 2022, and we wrapped it up in February of this year. And then just some content outline. So what we're gonna go over in this presentation, demographic data, findings, recommendations, and then Q&A at the end. And then these next four slides are just some data that we pulled from the actual survey, because it was a survey in combination with kind of an interview discussion portion. So these were four big data pools that we did just from this survey and kind of quantitative data. And then these were our findings for the service category discussion. So primary medical care was talked about a lot. And then these were some quotes that came up and really kind of stuck out to us during this discussion. And then continuing that service category discussion, of course, housing was also a big topic that was talked about, as well as mental health services. And then just some of those quotes that stuck out from that conversation, as well as our findings from then moving on to the interview discussion portion. So this discussion portion was kind of centered around the question, how do you see yourself within the trans mm-hmm. community? And so folks and participants, they went ahead and shared their experience as well as what worked for them in the, oh my God, what's the word I'm looking for? In the system of care, what worked for them and what didn't. And then a lot of quotes that came out of that. And then some conclusions, so just some main points. So cycles, social services that maintain their importance, challenges with the referral system, and then clients who actually praised, we had quite a couple of participants praise the Teladoc system since they were able to work with the flexibility of those virtual appointments. And then of course the recommendations. So the first one being a trans-specific cultural competency training for service providers. The second one being a center of excellence-based wraparound one-stop shop service provision that would better support trans individuals. And the third recommendation being targeted recruitment of trans service providers to better reflect the community being served. And that takes us to the end.
Was there anywhere in there where it said how many people were asked the questions?
Yes, like that would be, and let me go back, in the background. So okay, a total okay. of 25 participants.
Oh, there it is right there, okay.
So does anyone have any questions?
Do you think having the Safeway gift card was a big help?
Yes, I do actually. Our big group that we got out of that, they were really they're very appreciative and they're very incentivized by the Safeway gift card. A lot of them did give us feedback that they wish it was more, but they went ahead and took it anyway.
Yeah, okay, great. Does anybody have any questions or suggestions? If not, we'll say thanks and looking forward to you presenting this. All right, so that'll bring us to the end time of our meeting, which the next meeting is May 9th, 3 to 4 p.m. So we'll see everybody at the big meeting and then here also. All right. Thank you, guys. Thanks, Stephen, again.
Bye.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you all.